Nathan is on his way out to Adepticon, so I am here with frequent guest host, Maddie. Maddie, welcome back to the show.
Hi. Pleasure to be here.
Hi.
Sorry about the whole, like, car thing yesterday.
Yeah, well, that's not necessarily your fault, although it, I guess, technically, okay, yes, it's your fault. There's nothing we can say about that that isn't true.
It's always my fault.
Well, that's right. So, it's been an interesting week, to say the least. We have a model of the week that we would love to talk about, but we're going to wait for 360 on that one. I'm sure you all know exactly which one that is that we're talking about that we will be waiting for 360 on. But in this particular case, I would say, you know, let's maybe just talk about some ridiculous dreadnoughts and kind of go from there.
Yeah.
But
we were kind of just looking through the GW page right now, and we were looking for the sled thing.
Yeah, the wolf chariot.
The wolf chariot.
The flying wolf chariot, yeah.
That slides on ice.
It's a fucking joke.
But I guess next week.
Yeah, maybe next week if we get a 360. I want a 360 of it. I want to really get a good look at it so that I can really, really make fun of it.
You want to be actually drinking.
I want to make fun of it properly. Yes, exactly. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what we did this week in hobby. You and I just finished another 250-point game of Star Trek Attack Wing.
Yes.
That's our second, as I said. You won this one, I won the last one. This one was a much closer game than the previous one.
Yes.
Where I lost no ships.
That's right. The Federation, when you scale them up, are kind of get evened out with everybody else, where everybody else seems to get a lot better. Because even what I think about it more and more, Fed stuff, because it's all so independent, you really have a hard time scaling up because people can start picking off where they need to. And it seems like I used Romulan Steam. There's way too many tricks to not have a better chance at scaling up. Where I think the Feds don't scale up as well as everybody else.
Well, I don't know. Like I said, I think that Feds scale up just fine. Ooh, my mic might have just spiked there. Let me just fix that. There we go. I think that the Feds do scale up just fine. I don't think it's quite as bad as you're saying. I think what it really comes down to with them is that you're working on a fleet where each ship is its own individual combo. You're so used to doing that at 100 points, you're not kind of stepping back and thinking of, well, what am I looking for out of this ship? I'm looking for a cheap captain and this one piece of gear, and then it's just this ship, right? Like when I did my Keldons with dorsal weapons, batteries, and all level one captains, right? Because I didn't need anything more than that. It saved me points, whereas every single one of your ships cost way more than that did, because you had four crew, an expensive captain, some torpedoes on there. I think your cheapest ship was still more expensive than those four ships I put on the table.
I think my cheapest ship is like maybe running 45 points.
Yeah. Oh, I should mute my phone.
Okay, so for tonight we're drinking coffee and water. Because it's a Monday, and I'm pretty sure Lang is still hungover from the weekend.
I'm hungover from the weekend, and I have to work tomorrow, and I was just going to keep it a secret.
That's
fine. Thanks for making me look like a douche.
Whatever.
Well, you got to drive home, too, so I mean, it's going to go.
It's responsible Jada Gamercast.
It is
going to
be very responsible Jada Gamercast today. All right.
So what'd you do in hobby?
Outside of that, I painted my Dendrenzi. I got my test paint for my Dendrenzi up and running, which I showed you right before we started here. I like the way that it looks. I'm pretty happy with it. I have a hard time painting anything for Firestorm Mana now, because every single thing I paint now, I'm always just like, but it's just not, it's not quite what I did for my directorate. You know, like, it's just, I love my directorate so much that now I have such a hard time with it.
Question, why don't you and Nathan have a featured area on the website where you show off your models?
Primarily because we don't paint regularly enough, but I guess that's not necessarily an excuse anymore, because we've got the fucking Jada Gamercast Let's Play that I can hardly ever get Nathan to play games for. But it's one of those things where, I don't know, it's just, I don't think we care to showcase our stuff that much.
But
I do, like, I'll post it to the Facebook group, and that's fine with me, right? Like, I don't necessarily feel like I need to do more than that.
Fair enough.
That's me anyways.
Well, usually your stuff goes in the Firestorm group, though, not the Jada Gamer one.
I guess I haven't posted it in Jada Gamer. Yeah, okay, I'll have to start posting in Jada Gamer more often. Yeah, I post in the Firestorm group if it's Firestorm. Just because I haven't, like, done any GW stuff as well, I haven't posted
in there. I'm just saying, maybe the people want to see what you're bragging about here.
I don't brag. I'm just saying I'm happy with it.
It looks very good. It looks very good.
See, now you're bragging.
It's nicer than the stuff that's on the box.
It's nicer than what's on the box. Yes, that's true. And that was the goal.
Spartans should pay you to pay for them, because I don't know who they're paying right now.
I'm sure they'd fuck that up somehow still. Mm. All right, so let's move on to the models of the week. the models of the week, since we will not be talking about the fucking chariot.
Wolf sled.
The wolf sled is going to be the motherfucking murder fangs. Because these are the most...
A murder of dreadnoughts?
These are the most ridiculous dreadnoughts I've ever seen. Now, I like dreadnoughts. I think dreadnoughts are an amazing idea. I love the concept. I love the fluff. I love the way that it... when you put your cup, put up there.
Sorry.
Banging the mic. Damn. Damn!
Pulling a Nathan.
Banging the table. Yeah. No, it's just, you know, when we talk about all the things we hate, the cardinal sins of Jaded Gamercast when it comes to modeling, these hit all of them.
Oh.
There's pointless home upgrades.
Runs.
There's home pointless runs upgrades that make no sense whatsoever, and they're so heavily adorned with garbage, it's so hard for me to look at. So
like, you think the Blood Angel Furioso kit was bad, which it isn't even that bad. These ones put them out of their misery. Look at this. Oh my god, I haven't even seen this
you
guy's
didn't
face.
See the face, right?
I haven't seen the face yet.
This is like cardinal sin number one is just too much garbage, all the extra baubles and bullshit, right? And then cardinal sin number two is Marines without helmets. And there's a goddamn dreadnought without a helmet now. It looks so bad because
he has fangs.
Oh, I know he has fangs.
Oh,
of course
God.
He has fangs. Here's what's so bad about this, okay? When it's just a helmet, you don't really picture a torso. Just like a torso with like no arms or legs. But all I can picture is just a torso with no arms or legs sitting in that little bucket.
Angry face.
Yeah, in that little bucket there. Right? Like he doesn't even have a pelvis. There's just no room for that garbage anymore.
And this murder fan kit is... why does he have Wolverine claws?
Ice claws. No, he has ice claws.
I know. I was saving the alien ice claw thing for if I get back on the show in the next 2 weeks of the thing. Because I have a whole rant about that.
About alien ice?
You have no idea how much I want to rant about alien ice. I'm just saying that the positioning of these claws is stupid. Because Bajoran's lightning claws are way nicer. I don't know why they needed Wolverine claws and then lightning claw one. And then the Furioso Dreadnoughts have two different claws themselves. It's like... The Dreadnoughts have 17,000 different lightning claws.
And some of them
of them are fucking alien ice now. It's like, I don't see it.
Yeah, and then you get a nice bone sculpture happening on top here, which is pretty fancy.
It has an orc skull on the top, actually.
Yeah, man, that's a winner, I guess. The Venerable. Venerable.
We were talking about this yesterday at the movie, where... Because the Power Fist wasn't good enough. It has to hold a giant fucking axe now, right?
Well, again, the Power Fist wasn't good enough with the Ice Claws. It needed Ice Claws and a Power Fist.
Ugh.
So, yes, now it needs an axe because a Power Fist is not good enough. You need a giant axe Power Fist, which is fantastic. You also need a Storm Shield because of reasons. Why not get that 3+ invuln?
Well, the Storm Shield's a great idea. It's just... The execution of how they put it on the model with it carrying an axe is just ridiculous. Like, this went from like rudimentary sarcophagus dead marine
rudimentary
to Gundam Wing in about two steps.
Oh, it's all sorts of anime. Yeah, no, I'll have to agree with that.
This is Gundam Dreadnought right now.
Yeah, and it just I don't know it everything that they do with these takes away from what I love about Dreadnoughts.
Yes.
So then we've got Bjorn the Fellhand, which
is a legit
dread.
And I'm glad he got a plastic model. It's been long overdue.
Yeah.
I'm glad they didn't do the whole fine cast thing with him. They just took him straight to plastic. He looks great. He looks like a really fleshed out version of his metal one, because his metal one was a great dreadnought.
Mm-hmm.
His dreadnought hits all the right points.
Well, except for the fact that he's covered in bullshit because he's Space Wolves.
But let's forgive that aspect.
But I like
this patterning more on the sarcophagus. Maybe not the wolf pelt on the front
and the wolf pelt on the arm
and the
wolf pelt
everything.
On
but,
the other
but
leg.
The actual like embroidering on the sarcophagus is actually really nice. Like that looks like he's a special character.
The design is interesting enough. Yeah, I mean, I will agree with that. I think the design is interesting enough. All right, so I don't know.
Does he have fucking ice claws though?
Oh yeah,
God,
you know,
damn it.
He also has ice claws. He's got an extra ice claw, and it looks like there's
a flamer underneath. Of course,
little vagina hole in the middle. Whatever that's for, that might be some sort of ice breath. I'm sure we'll come through. But yeah, come on. The Space Wolf's Guard Edition is $300. I didn't even take a look at that.
Yeah, they have two special edition of codexes. They have a Longfang Edition and they have the Wolf Guard Edition.
I don't care.
They have two special editions.
My viewpoint on special editions is well established at this point. I want nothing to do with it.
So you don't want to buy a 7 Dreadnought Drop Army?
I don't, oddly enough. No. No, I have no urge whatsoever to buy a 7 Dreadnought drop army for, I'm sure, what comes out to the exact price
of buying it. I just want to touch base on this right now because it's so funny, even though I'm pretty sure this will be talked about next week. Dreadnoughts, they released an awesome Dreadnought kit for Space Wolves, and the Blood Angels do have an awesome Dreadnought kit last edition.
Right.
And they've pretty much made Dreadnoughts useless in the game.
Well, no, I mean, they're not useless in the game. I think that's silly. No, Dreadnoughts have always and will always be a good choice. They're just not the you always take one in your list always because Dreadnoughts are, you know, so good for the points. Like, it's just the way that the game now treats vehicles and the way that it treats walkers and the way that it treats kind of like that aspect of the game has made them not quite as badass as they used to be, but they're still a good choice. I think saying that they've made the game so that Dreadnoughts are pointless is not true at all.
I have to argue that. But all right, that's not a show.
Fair enough. All right, so let's move on to the weekly listener poll. The question that we had for you guys from last week is, what is the most important part of a starter kit? So what did you vote for this, Matt?
I voted rules. All right. And I don't mean rules in the sense that it needs to have rules or not have rules. It needs to have rules that the biggest selling point for me was getting the full rules.
Core rule book.
But in like a dummy version, like not the blinged out version, like
with the 800 pages of art and
yeah,
fluff.
I wish Firestorm would have just a pocket version. I think that's one of the best things GW ever did, was had their blinged out book,
yeah,
and then have their pocket version.
Right.
I would love to have a pocket version for every rule set that I wanted.
Yeah,
and I think that's fair. And then have a blinged out one if I wanted to spend more money on a nice one.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. For me, I voted value. I think when it comes down to it, if the models aren't good, I'm not going to get it. Yes, that's true. But even if the models are fantastic, if it's not a good value, I'm not really all that interested in it because typically I'm going to be picking up the rules anyways. I'm going to be picking up armies, balanced armies, all that kind of stuff is going to be the case. But so value was the winner in this one. 47% of the vote was value. And models were the second place with 31% of the vote. Everything else kind of landed in anywhere between 4 and 10% there. But I found that interesting because, again, the models being really nice does tend to draw people in. So I'd absolutely understand that aspect of it.
And GW is doing a really good job of making a plug-and-play models that still look good. Which is, like, don't even get me started on Privateer Press on how their starter kit looks.
Right.
And it's horrible. It's a bad... The game is good. I will not make my own opinion on if the game's good or not, but the game, I've been told, is good.
Right.
People love to play it, but a lot of the things, even the people who love playing the game, say the starter kit is below par, and it's because of the models.
Right.
The models are just not that good, even compared to what their regular models are.
Well,
Star Kit is even a step below that.
Yeah, but I think that's pretty understandable in their particular situation, just because of the amount of models that they put out that are pewter or resin or whatever it is. You know, they don't. Do they even do a lot of resin models? I think right now it's just, is it pewter and some plastic?
Yeah, it's pewter and some plastic.
Some plastic, right? So Adam had posted a comment here. He said, "For new people, we want the swag, cool models for the dinosaurs using starter kits as booster packs. Value." And I found that was very interesting because, for the most part, that is essentially what people voted. Now, yes, I will admit, I'm a dinosaur who does look at them as booster packs because I have or have had upwards of, you know, 8, 9, 12 armies, you know, at a time. You know what I'm saying now, too. Like, when you and I were talking about the 7th edition starter kit, we were sitting there going like, okay, well, if it's this and this, we're going to get one. We're going to split it. We're going to trade the models back and forth and be, you know, happy as clams. But as soon as they said, oh, well, it's going to be Space Wolves and it's going to be this and there's really nothing in there that isn't already on the shelves, it was just like, well, why the fuck would we want to buy it? There's no reason whatsoever for us to waste our time picking that thing up because there's no value in there whatsoever because we are looking to essentially build on top of what we currently have in our armies.
And if I could get a couple cool – because what the rumors were saying before was a Blood Angel, right? And we were talking about maybe an Orc and Blood Angel one.
Right.
Just getting like a couple extra like cool looking Blood Angel models, da da da. You get some cool new Orc models, maybe whip them up and add them into a game, right? Maybe I should go play a game for once.
Right. Well, and that was also kind of hinging on like whether or not I wanted to play some 40K after that Orc book came out. And unfortunately, I have had no urge to continue to play 40K.
No, yeah. So that's bad. But I can see where he's coming from. But yeah, I also agree that I like the value more. than the cool models, because it doesn't matter if there was amazing models in it. I already have so much of the stuff, and if it doesn't even, it's not even army I play. Starter kits don't make me want to start new armies. Which, as I say that, the Firestar Armada one made me want to start a Terran army because the Terran one looks so good in there.
Yeah, very much so. Prodigal Gamer says, I voted for terrain because, to me, that is the single most important element that distinguishes a starter product from a tabletop war game from all other products for a game. Starter product for a tabletop war game from all other products for a game, which basically consists of models. If you truly want to start someone out in the game, it is in your interest as a company to give them all of the required elements to play the game right out of the box, which necessarily means putting some terrain in alongside the rules and minis. Even if you're just, even if it's just some paper terrain, that beats the hell out of cereal boxes and blankets when you're starting out. Everyone seems to have learned this lesson, and GW has apparently still forgotten it. Even Infinity is putting out a playmat and some fold-up terrain in their upcoming starter set. I think that that's actually a really good point, and that's why I kind of wanted to bring that one up. I do feel like if you are trying to get people started into the game, that terrain is a huge, huge feature. Now, do I think it's super important? Yes, I agree it's super important. Is it the most important thing to me? No, it's not the most important thing to me. I think as soon as you start throwing terrain in, though, that does increase the value of that
box. You guys touched on this in the last episode, and you guys were talking about the 4th edition starter that had the Aquila.
Yes,
that
was the one I brought up.
Well, I know you remember the 3rd edition starter.
Yep.
And the terrain in that one, which was like the ghetto trees and the walls.
Yes.
Has there ever been a better step up between the ghetto trees and walls?
Jungle trees and walls.
To like a broken down forge wall model in like one edition. Like literally like that jump from the 3rd to the 4th was amazing.
Well, yeah. But and then like he says, and then it seems like they just forgot it. Yeah. It was like, well, what kind of terrain do you guys have in there now? Oh, no.
Some more walls.
It's
how are you going to buy? How are you going to buy terrain if we give you the fucking terrain anything?
Right. Exactly. It just, you know, like these are the types of things that are just poor decisions that really start to fall off after time. So for me, yeah, I do feel like terrain is important. I think that that is one definitely to touch on. All right, so thanks to everyone who voted on the weekly listener poll. You can find those at jadedgamercast.com, and we will have another question for you at the end of the show, of course, if we remember. All right, so let's move on to the main topic of today's show. Oh, God. We're kind of in this weird in-between week where we're waiting around on Firestorm because we've heard tales that we will be getting the Mercenaries
supposedly
book soon.
There is a Mercenary book out there somewhere being playtested for stuff.
It's out there. Trust me, I've seen it.
No, but they're continuing.
Oh yeah, no. They keep saying like, oh, the playtesting is here. It's only almost been a year. I think Nathan said it very well on the Facebook group when he goes like, man, you could have knocked a girl up and like had a baby in the time it takes for Spartan games
and had to sell the and had to sell
and had
your
to
marauder.
Sell your marauders to pay for such baby. In the time it takes for Spartan Games to playtest and put out a PDF for the Marauders. You know, and again, I've got my own theories about why they're waiting so damn long and what the reasoning is behind it. And I think when they release it, once I see the rules, I'll know one way or another whether I was right or wrong. So until then, I'm not going to comment. You know, just put them on blast and just give them shit for it. But
yeah,
I think at this point, we'll just leave it. So, yeah.
It's just more... I think the reason why everybody's so emotional about it is because lots of people had dabbled in the Marauders book
when they first came out. They had a fleet.
And it's just disappointing because it's such a cool idea. And I think I'm more frustrated by it just by because I'm disappointed. Cool models.
And again, things that are out there. It would be like Games Workshop releasing 7th edition. And then in 7th edition, they go, right, so we got rid of all of these special rules that went with the Necron army. So, you know, until we release that Necron book, you can play with the legacy rules, which are bad. You're not going to win any games with those.
But they did do that.
Well, we've seen similar things, but like they've always still been playable because the game didn't change so much that they had completely fallen off, right? Whereas with the Mercenaries, it was done back when before like everything got cheaper, before you could do upgrades, before you could do hard points, before you could do all these different types of things, and it had changed in such a way that even if you were going off of the old rules, it didn't make any sense because allies were different.
Yeah,
like it just there was enough wrong with it that it was essentially unplayable. And I played against people who had Marauders lists using the Legacy rules, and even a bunch of their Mars just didn't exist anymore, so they couldn't do anything with it anymore. And anyways, we'll talk about that shit later. So, in this in-between, before we actually get the Space Wolves Codex to talk about, we're going to be talking about
air
the...
quotes. Codex.
Air quotes. Codex. We will be talking about the blind boosters for the collective OP for Star Trek Attack Wing, because yes. That's five new ships that were given out as part... Well, not given out, were sold.
It was six.
They were... No, it was five. One, two, three, four, five.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was six.
No, it's five, man. Well, what's the sixth one? Am I missing a sixth one here?
No, I thought there was a sixth one. My bad.
No, not at all. No. There's five. Five ships, one for each race and an independent.
Yes, in the Manhattan, yes.
So, you know, we got some new ships. We got some new ships to talk about, so that's what we're going to do. So I'm going to start us off. We're going to start off with the Klingon, Katinga, the Bamoth. This is an Enterprise-era ship, for anybody who isn't aware. It is your very typical kind of D7 Raptor style. Four attack, one evade, four hull, three shield on the special one. It can cloak, which is great because a lot of those old Klingon ships are kind of 50-50, whether they can cloak or not, or they have battle stations. Not a bad ship for 24 points. This is very similar to, again, like a Galar class or what is it, Nebula? Nebula class.
It carries the Romulan tech stat line.
Yeah, it will cloak and sensor echo, and then your evade and lock on are always your general basics. You can perform a red maneuver while there is an auxiliary token beside your ship. Okay, sure. I can keep doing flips over and over again. I can't do actions, so I mean it's kind of like sure, but this is very much one of those things where you might run into that and need it every once in a while, but for the most part, you're basically just taking this for the extra shield. 2 points more for an extra shield. Sure, why the hell not? The movement card on it's not bad. It's very typical two hard turns and a flip three.
It's a Valdor.
Yeah,
it's the Valdor's movement card.
Pretty basic. So, breaking down the cards in here, there's a couple of interesting cards, but for the most part, a lot of them are kind of throwaways.
If you haven't noticed that they've actually upgraded the...
They've done that model once before. And then they'd gotten rid of it. And then, yes, this is essentially the same model with a different cast.
Yeah, it's the one that's in the first wave.
Yeah,
is different
from this cast.
Yeah, they have a different cast in this one. Right, that's what I noticed actually. So and that one actually looks a lot better than the first one. That was the metallic green.
Yes, it does. Okay, so the only card here that I really, really want to talk about is Triterium Intermix. It is a tech slot, 4 points. Action, discard this card to flip up all critical damage cards face down and repair one damage to your ship's hull. You may perform a evade action as a free action. So it uses up your action as an evade, it gives you a hull point back, and it flips all the critical damage cards over. I think this one is nice, but I don't think that
and it's not,
a lot of people are taking it.
It's
not unique, no.
It's not unique. So you can actually have it like
as multiples
across your fleet. And that wouldn't be bad. It wouldn't be bad to fill points here and there, kick stuff in. If you have the tech slots.
Kapla is an elite ability. Not really anything crazy. You basically get to discard the card to choose one of your dice roll results. Mm-hmm. So you get to choose a crit. I mean, it's great. It can't be re-rolled. Hooray. For 2 points, you get a free crit. I think if you have 2 points left over and you've got an elite ability, you'll probably throw this in.
Use it with the elite attack dice and guarantee yourself a double hit.
Yeah, that would also be a really cool way to play it. Yeah, there you go. Nice man.
Yeah.
But again, it's one use only. It's a discard, so that's that. Yeah. The other one is Kudivas. During the modify attack dice step of the combat phase, you may discard this card to add an additional hit. So this basically makes your strength 6 attack, a strength 7 attack. It is worth taking for 2 points. You're going to want to take it for 2 points. Some decent cards in here for Klingons. Nothing amazing, nothing game-breaking. The captain is a level 7, but for the most part, he's just disabling crew for +1 attack. But I hate doing that. Usually any crew you're taking, you don't want to be disabling for +1.
The only person
there's better ways to get +1.
Yeah, the only person who's ever has cheap crew is like the Confaller. That's only on independence.
That's right.
That's the only time you can ever like feed crew into stuff. Other than that, if you're taking crew on like a Klingon ship or something like that, the crew's usually too good. or it's being used for something else.
Yeah, you get a photon torpedo in here, which is just a very generic photon.
Yeah, all their torpedoes in this set, for all of them, are strength 5 and they're 4 points, and they don't have the battle station turn.
Right, they're just straight up generic strength. Torpedoes. Yeah, so yeah, they're really nothing to them. All right, so yeah, for the Klingon, I think if you're a Klingon player, you're probably going to look at this and really want to get at least one.
Yes.
So that you can pick up a couple of those cards. I think if you really, really like the intermix, just for the fact that it's letting you flip over those
repairing cards
and getting a free hull out of it for 4 points and a free evade, then hey, sure. But for the most part, you're only going to need one. Because yeah, the two really good cards in here, the two good cards in here are unique. So I think one of these, for anybody who's looking to pick one up, that's all you're really looking for. So let's talk about feds.
Okay, I got the Jaeger in front of me right here. The good thing about the Jaeger is it's extremely maneuverable. It's got the, I think this is the Defiant, a movement dial, so it's all whites except for a flippy turn 3 red.
Yeah.
It's
basically the Dominion Jem'Hadar attack fighter.
Yeah.
It's the exact same stat line and the exact same maneuver card.
The name one
same cost as well.
Yeah, the name one for the Saber is the USS Jaeger. It's a 3-2-3-3.
Yeah, same as the attack fighter.
Two crew, two weapon slots. The good thing about the Jaeger is you can, when attacking with photon torpedoes, you do not need to disable the photons. And that's not just for the photons that are in this set, it's actually for the good photons.
Well, it's for any photon you want to put on it, right?
Just not the quantums.
Right, because it specifically says
photon torpedoes.
So you can
take the 5-pointers that have the battle station turn.
That's right.
And still use them on this guy. So that's good. Benjamin Maxwell, he was the traitor guy from the episode.
Well, not necessarily. He was just the guy with PTSD.
Yeah, he killed a bunch of Cardassians.
Trying to kill all the fucking Cardassians because he was still fighting the war in his head.
Yeah. He's okay. He's a cheap level 7. With an elite talent, but his skill is not that good. Change maneuver battle.
What?
You have to disable
You don't like
him.
That skill?
Because you have to discard
him. Well, I know you have to discard him, right? But like, I just don't, like, I think that you're going to hold on to him and you're just going to keep him until like it is that clutch moment of just like, fuck, all right, now I'm going to go ahead and change my maneuver dial, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because he's 7, he's definitely high enough. But what I would do is I would have him on there and I would put Kirk on him. Because when you discard him, Kirk becomes the captain.
Okay, that's a good idea. You get the elite.
You get the elite. You get the double elites, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I like about him is you throw Kirk on him. He's a 9 now, and you can use that to save your ass when you don't want to bump.
And then
when you're just like, I can't bump. I cannot bump this turn.
See, I was looking at more like. You use him to find a way after someone moves to maneuver behind them, and then even though you're shooting last, you're probably going to be out of their arc, and you still get your shots away because once you discard him, you'll be down to 1.
Right.
But yeah, having Admiral Kirk.
I think there are better ways to use Kirk, but I think that if you're
going
to take him, you have to take Kirk, and I like him because if you put him on your flagship, you put him on with Kirk. Kirk becomes the captain when he's disabled, so you still get to use all that fun stuff that Kirk has. And Kirk is still a great captain, right? So you're in great shape in that respect. And it works out really, really well for you because of the fact that you get that free change your shit and throw him out. You're giving up 4 points, but whatever.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Shelby's is the one that you want in this
pack.
Yeah,
she's the reason why you want this pack.
She is... first of all, if you're playing any regular OPs and you're running a Federation Dreadnought... You're going to be seeing Borg pretty much every time you play anyway. So taking her is a must. For 2 points, you're getting a reroll on one of your blank results. But if you're playing Borg, she gives you a +1 and you get to reroll all your blanks. I was running a Federation Dreadnought in the last OP I played, and I was getting 6 defense dice.
Right.
And I had a little Lara on there, so I was always getting my actions.
Mm-hmm.
So I would take Paris out, Lieutenant Paris out, and I'd put Shelby in and replace him.
Mm.
And she's cheaper.
Yeah.
Than Paris, and then that's all my Dreadnought because I was running my Dreadnought with Lara, Sulu, Shelby.
This is a piece of the stack.
Hmm.
Never mind. Do your thing. Yeah. So Shelby,
and then I had someone else on there, but I was getting like, I was running like, and I had Kirk on there, and I had Picard.
Okay.
It was a 90-point Voyager, but
yeah,
I had
you were playing the Dreadnought.
I was running like 6 defense dice, 6 attack. Yeah, and I was like turning stuff off. But yeah, I would take Paris and I put Shelby in. And then pretty much I'm running any Borg that I run into in an OP.
There you go. All right, so Barclay.
Barkley's okay. He's disabled, so he's not that good.
But well, he's an action and a disabled, yeah. So he's extra not that good.
But for each hit results, you have to roll 3 defense dice. For each defense dice
evade
you roll, you roll per one or your haul. If you roll 2 or more, this action in a single round, you get an auxiliary power token. But if you roll 3, he's discarded. But you get 3 haul back.
There's too many stipulations on Barkley for me to really ever consider him. Mm-hmm. I think that there's better ways to get haul back, like Scotty, where it's just like, and you just get haul back. Yay, yeah. 2. No negative side effects. And I think that's the biggest thing for him.
Mm-hmm. I do like Preemptive Strike, though.
All right, so this is a unique elite ability.
Yeah. Discard this card to target a ship at range 2-3 in your forward fire arc. Roll 3 attack dice. And he hits and crits damage. Target the ship, hit the ship as normal. But you do get your defense dice. But I would I would stack this on top of secondary torpedoes and a quantum torpedo salvo. So yeah. I get 3 attacks, 3 attacks, 5 attacks.
Yeah, like it's an extra round of attacks. One of the interesting things about it is that it basically says roll 3 attack dice. So it's not an attack. So you don't get to add bonuses to it. You don't get to do anything crazy with it.
But it's another volley of something.
Yeah, because they get their defense dice against it, I think for 2 points you're better off taking other options. Like there's just, you know, like doing like what you did where you're just stacking cheat deaths.
Yeah.
I would still take another cheat death over that.
Oh yeah, well right? Cheat death is probably one of the best cards in the game.
Exactly. So I think when you're talking about feds, there's too many good elite abilities out there to really make them feel worthwhile at this point.
Oh, and let's talk about the ship, how it looks for a second.
Oh, Jesus.
Worst painted ship in the game.
The ship is massive. It's way too big for the size of the ship in the canon, and it is one of the worst painted ships in the game. It is sloppy and disgusting.
It's bad.
The ship is super cool. Okay, so, Matt, so for Fed players, being a Fed player yourself, do you feel like you're going to need more than one of these?
No.
Because you're just going to go Jaeger, and then that's all you're going to need. You'll be happy with
everything. I think everything in here is unique anyway, so really... Yeah, like you don't need any of you need this once. So it's more of like,
do you want more of the same ship? But you said, it's so similar to the Defiant.
Yeah,
there's so many similar ships out there. I don't feel like you need to be stacking them.
I want one to be a completist.
Unless you just really, really love the look of the saber.
Yeah, I want one to be a completist, but really,
there's good cards.
Yeah, if I draw a second one, I'll probably use it as trade bait.
Well, and I think the Jaeger will absolutely make it into your fleet.
Oh yeah, I'll definitely use the Jaeger. I really like it. It's a great torpedo boat. This and the Excelsior side by side are going to be really good.
So, I think my last question for this. Okay, so this does not have a rear fire arc.
No,
would be amazing if it had a rear fire arc. It would be phenomenal, but it does not. So you have to just deal with the fact that it does not have that.
But it's ultra maneuverable, so it's fine.
It is very maneuverable. You're not gonna worry too much about that. And because you don't have to disable your torpedoes, you just keep crushing torpedoes all game.
Exactly.
You know, relock on torpedo, relock
like
on
even
torpedo.
If you run Captain Spock in the new the new thing, absolutely. You use him on a Jaeger. Good.
All right. So we're gonna talk about the Maquis. The Gavroche.
I used this in the last OP, actually. This was my draw. I really like this ship.
So 2-3-3-3 for 22 points. So kind of right on the same lines as the Jaeger there. It's independent. The only thing I don't like about it is there's no tech slot upgrades that you can take for it.
Yeah.
It's just 2 crew and a weapons system. So you're a little bit pigeonholed in terms of what you can do with it. But the action here is action, disable up to 2 of your crew upgrades to add +1 attack die to each of your attacks this round for each upgrade that you disabled with this action.
Use followers of Khan.
Right. You basically throw 2 followers of Khan on here for 1 point each, and then you just disable
them. And suicide them in.
And then you basically get to roll 4 attack dice, which is pretty minimum. It's got a movement that looks exactly like the Jaeger. So let's talk about the cards. There's really nothing good in here.
No, I like him, but
Michael Eddington, the captain.
But I'm thinking of this not actually running him on this ship. I'm running him on the Song Borg ship.
Yes, all right.
Running him on the Song Borg ship, and then the elite talent when we get to it is amazing.
The Song. Yeah. Okay, so basically the way that his special ability works is that at the start of the game you put 3 mission tokens on this card, which is interesting because this is the second card that we've seen where you use mission tokens, right, where they're basically saying like, yes, you get to use this ability, but only 3 times in a game, which is pretty cool. It requires an action, which is, it's all right. Target a ship within range band 1 to 3 and discard a mission token. Target ship rolls minus 2 attack dice against your ship this round. And that's the only thing I don't like. I wish it was just minus 2 all around. But minus 2 against your ship is kind of a pain in the ass, because I think anybody rolling against this ship is not going to care about the minus 2. And if you do that, they're just going to shoot another ship anyways. So, I mean, it's not really accomplishing much for you.
But like I said, if you're running him on a song board ship, which is a big independent ship.
I guess that's fair, yeah. If you're going outside of these little podunk pieces of garbage, yeah. So focus particle beam is funny, because it's essentially exploding sixes.
Yeah. And yeah, the good thing is if you run that with the ship and you use the action to give yourself plus 2, you can still use this and get 5 attacks.
And roll 5 attacks, and then for your crits you roll the additional dice and you get to stack to a max of 3 additional crits to it.
But that's only if you hit every time.
Yes, exactly.
So if
you're crushing,
if you're somehow able to hit 5 times,
right,
and on 5 dice,
right,
good for you.
Exactly. So I mean, it's kind of funny for like an independent weapon, but I do like it. I'm guessing this will make it into my Bajoran fleet. So
Hijack. This is an amazing card.
This is phenomenal. This is one of those things that I think you're gonna want to have. If you are playing Faction Pure, which is essentially what you and I are talking about, which is what all we really talk about on this show is playing Faction Pure. Hijack for 5 points in a Faction Pure list. It's 4 normally for an elite skill. Is really, really, really cool. So it's action. Discard this card to target a ship in range band 1 or 2 that is not cloaked and has no active shields. So it's that old chestnut.
Yeah.
Disable all of your remaining shields and one of your crew upgrades on the target ship. So this is interesting. So you're disabling all your shields and you're disabling a crew upgrade on the target ship. Then steal a face-up tech or weapon upgrade card of your choice from that ship, even if the upgrade exceeds your ship's restrictions.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, because if you're playing against Borg, blade of armor. Right?
And that's why this card is so good.
A blade of armor, is it a Borg upgrade or is it a tech upgrade?
I think either the ablative or the feedback pulse.
The feedback pulse is a tech, I believe.
Yeah. So that's what
either
you're
way,
taking
right?
away.
Yeah, exactly.
You're really just trying to take the feedback
trying to take away shit from them. Yeah, exactly. And for 4 points, it's really going to be worthwhile. 5 if you're going the other way. And you get to disable a crew on top of that.
Yeah.
It is a nice way to play if you're able to get this out there. I think people who are like, you know, if they're using energy disruptors and they follow up with this, this is a really, really good way to play, because those shields are automatically down. So cool card. Great card. Okay, so Sakona, add an additional weapon upgrade to your slot, and all of your weapon upgrades cost minus 2 SP.
If they're 5 or less.
With a cost of 5 or less. So, I mean, sure. I mean, I look at it and I go, I guess it means
if you're playing with people that don't use Faction Pure, she's a great upgrade on any Federation ship.
Yeah, I'm mad there's not like an extra spicy Hosperot card in here, because I feel like that was a missed opportunity. But anyways, so we got Lawn, good old Lawn from Voyager.
Mm.
And during the attack roll dice step of the combat phase, you may disable this card and spend a battle stations to add plus 1 attack die to your attack. Not worthwhile for 2 points. Why would you waste your battle station token that can get you multiple hits just so you can roll plus 1 attack? Like, that's kind of silly. So, okay, all in all, not a terrible... I mean, there's some shitty boxes out there.
If you want to run... I'm going to run an independent fleet one day.
Sure.
I'm so happy I have one of those.
Yes, well, you will be happy that you have one. The ship is cool.
Yeah, it's a cool-looking ship. And they're
We've seen it in the show.
And they're coming out with the actual Voyager Maquis ship in one of the ones soon. So that's like a little preview of what we're going to see.
Yeah, which is like, very cool.
Because that's a ship you're going to have.
So yeah, all in all, I mean... Yeah, there's never any point in having more than one of these, because everything is unique on here.
Yeah.
And you're just not going to need any more than one. But it's fun, I guess. But shitty cards and shitty stats.
Except for the hijack. It's
the problem of it being a cheap ship doing cheap things.
Yeah.
As opposed to everything else on there. But yeah, you basically have to stack Followers of Khan on there to get those extra attacks. For 2 extra dice, you get 2 extra attacks.
Yeah.
Maybe stack that on top of the particle beam, or stack it on top of like Tholian plasma torpedoes or something like that, right?
Or the Gorn.
You get away with the Gorn. You know, but like, as soon as you start kind of playing around with some of those, you might look at it and go, this is all right. But for the most part, a lot of these things are going to be combined with like Soon, the Soon ship and all that kind of jazz. Yeah. All right, so.
And Khan. And you're like Khan and running the mess.
Let's talk about them Roms.
The Romulans. Cheater, Romulans.
That's all Romulans do is cheat, and that's why you got to love playing Romulans.
There is a hilarious. I don't understand this one, and this is going to be a little tangent for a second, that on BoardGameGeek, people are always comparing Romulan cards with other cards and saying that Romulans are getting the short end of the stick all the time from WizKids. And I really do not see how that is. Like, I understand where the point costs are out of whack and people have, like, better things. But when you put them on Romulan ships and you have those abilities, Romulan ships are just
Because WizKids doesn't assign points according to the actions on the bar and how good they are or the maneuvering on the card in terms of how good it is. They just go 2 points per thing on the initial stat. So, like, look, if you look at this, it's like, it's 22 points because it has that stat line. And that's the only thing that they do to give it. Like, that's the only thing they can
do. But when they're, like, haphazardly just giving, like, the extra cards, like, their point values, like, people have, like, an entire thread about how Romulan stuff costs more. And I'm just like, but the Romulan stuff is still really
good. It's amazing.
It's like, so you're paying one extra point.
Fucking interface generators. It doesn't mean,
Okay, sorry. Interface generators.
Tactical officers.
Power interface generators 3 points.
It makes no goddamn sense.
Whatever. Okay.
Ignore an attack. Take one damage. Anyways, so the ship itself. Let's talk about the ship itself.
So you're getting another TOS. The Vortivore. You're getting another TOS Bird of Prey with the cool little bird on the bottom. Yep. Same model.
Enterprise. Enterprise era.
Yeah, it's not bad. While you're cloaked after you perform a green maneuver, of course, because whatever, you may perform a free sensor echo.
Yeah, because, you know, why would Romulans get anything for an action when it's just something they would normally do for free anyways?
Like, and your green maneuvers are a soft one, a soft one, a straight one, and a straight two. So yeah, you're able to do like a two and a two.
It ends up being a very maneuverable ship, which is what's very nice.
And this running in tandem with the Galgathon with the torpedo barrage is going to be pretty good.
Because they're both
cheap.
And 18 points, by the way. The stat line on this is 2-2-3-2.
So pretty much 2-2-3 and 6 evade.
That's right.
Because you're never going to be...
No, you don't want to decloak.
I haven't even actually looked at the captain yet, so I don't even know how she is.
Nothing special there.
Okay. Though really, the only card we should really talk about is Advanced Cloaking. This is what you're getting. This is going to actually rival Interface Generator on making its way onto ships.
Yeah.
It's a tech, so those little tech slots that you have on your Roman stuff that you really are... that has a lot of stuff already that's usable on it. Again, you have another card that's like that. This is not unique, so you can get multiple of them.
Yep.
When attacking while you are cloaked, if there is no auxiliary power token beside your ship, you may place an auxiliary power token beside your ship before rolling any dice to keep your your cloak token from flipping to the red side.
Yeah, see, now what's awesome about this, as we said, is when you perform a green maneuver, you get to blah, 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 right? Same thing with, like, the Valdor and stuff like that, so... This is the one ship in here that we are going to say get as many of them as you can.
Especially if you're a Romulan player, because...
You're going to want them for almost all your ships. It's well worth doing to keep your cloak up.
And keeping your cloak up pretty much means, A, you can't be target locked ever.
That's right.
Which is awesome. And B, if you're always keeping your cloak up, you're always going to sensor echo. So you're going to move a 2 green forward, a 2 green sideways. A 2 green forward, a 2 green sideways. And you're pretty much going to be able to go wherever the hell you want.
And because especially with this ship in particular... you actually get away with being able to do that and other actions, and then you've got other ships that give you other actions. So it's a nice way to play.
And looking at the stuff that Terry spoiled for the fleet captain stuff, if you can get double techs, if you can actually run this on a Valdor with an interface, because you're getting two tech slots,
right?
You're gonna have a Valdor that can sensor echo every turn, that can take shots, and it's gonna have Varel.
And it's gonna get +1 attack.
And like the ship's gonna go everywhere and never die. It's gonna be like everywhere. Like it's borderline gonna be broken.
All right, so direct command I think is actually really cool. It's unique, so you're only ever gonna need it for one. But I do like what it does, just being able to say, you know what, instead of re-rolling all my hits, I'm going to go +2 attack.
I would run this on the Galgathon, so I can instead of using the guy who doesn't let me roll defense, I'd use this instead, and I still get the extra 2 attacks, and I'm going to target lock anyway, and I don't need to spend my target lock to shoot my torpedoes. I can spend my target lock for this.
And actually, yeah, that wouldn't be too bad, to be honest with you. So yeah, the captain, really, there's nothing special there. Basically, anytime you would normally disable a crew upgrade, you roll a dice, and on a battle stations, it's not disabled.
She's another Romulan 6. Awesome.
Yeah,
That's pretty much why you take her.
That's about it, right? Like, I think until we actually get our hands on, and I know it's out there, and I'm not going to talk about it too much, but until we actually get our hands on the Romulan Admiral.
Shinzon?
Yeah, Shinzon. Then I think a lot of this stuff is all going to kind of be waiting in the wings with people with big question marks over their heads. But for the most part, I think those two cards are the only cards in here that really stand out. But again, they're two cards that you're going to want. So
yeah, the Director Command is unique, though, but the Advanced Cloak, yeah, if you're a Romulan player, treat this like you would treat the Interface Generator. I have four Interface Generators. Like, I bought four of those stupid little ships.
Oh, of course. Well, why wouldn't you?
But I'm going to try and get as many of these Advanced Cloaks as possible.
Yeah.
Like, at least get two or three.
Yeah, and that's the winner. All right, so let's talk about the Dominion.
This is
This is me, man. All right, so Dominion. Interestingly enough, it is not Old Era. This is, the Saber wasn't Old Era. This one's not Old Era either. We get some interesting choices for ships, but it is just a Jem'Hadar attack ship.
The Saber wasn't Old Era. You're talking about the Romulan one.
Romulan one. Well, the Romulan one and this one was... I guess that's not Old Era either. No. I guess that's just... All right, never mind. I'm full of shit. All right, so it is just a Jem'Hadar attack ship. It is
another
same...
another Beetle.
Yes, it's another Beetle. It's the same as the other Jem'Hadar attack ships that you have, except for the fact that it's the third wing instead of the fifth wing. Yay! Same cost, same actions on the bar, same stats. Nothing's changed there. It does have its own special ability. When attacking with your primary weapon during the roll attack dice step of the combat phase, you may disable one of your crew upgrades to add plus one attack. The problem with this, there aren't really any cheap Dominion crew upgrades, and I just don't feel the need to do that to give myself dice. There's better options to give yourself dice.
The only one I can think of is you take the captain that gives you minus two, and that can give you a free crew.
If you wanted to go hard on it, I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
But even then, like, most of the time, if I'm taking a crew, I want that crew to do what it's supposed to be doing, right?
Especially with Jem'Hadar. Jem'Hadar crew, like, you've proven it have lots of combo, have lots of combo opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, as good as Fed. I don't know why you'd want to be disabling that at all.
Yeah. So, again, a great maneuver card out of
and
this ship.
And you have green twos.
Oh, yeah, I know we got green twos, yeah. That's the Jem'Hadar attack fighter is really, really nice.
Yeah.
It is a good ship. But, so, yeah, so there you go. You get an extra one of those. We got Goldemar as our captain here.
People should just be happy to have Goldemar because he's awesome. He was awesome in the show.
He was great in the show. It's unfortunate, though, that his ability isn't all that great. But he is a six. He does have an elite ability.
Yeah.
So, for 4 points, all attacks made against your ship with secondary weapons are at minus one. All attacks made against your ship with minefields are at minus two. So he gets to blitz minefields, and anybody shooting secondary weapons rolls one less dice.
He would be good on the Kraxen, per se, because a lot of people do shoot secondary weapons at the Kraxen if they're trying to like bring his shields down.
Yeah, if it's flying from the back, I mean, yeah. I could get that. For the most part, though, I'm kind of just... I look at it and I go...
He's level six.
I got better options. I got Wei Yun as a six. I got Ducats. I got all these other guys that give me much better abilities. So I don't think he's ever going to make his way into my fleet. We got generic photon torpedoes. Nothing special there. Ion thrusters is weird but useless. So basically, during the activation phase, after you reveal a straight maneuver, you may disable this card to add plus one to that maneuver's number. So a three becomes a four, two becomes a three, so on and so forth. May not be equipped with more than one ion, or a ship may not be equipped with more than one ion thruster. So this is just a way of taking their straight four and making a straight five to match up with the rest of your fleet,
that people have been saying that's useful for is that if you're not doing the Faction Pure again, you use it on Voyager to go a straight seven.
Right. So the elite ability that we get out of this, and I do love the fact that every single one of these came with an elite ability.
Yes.
And an elite captain. I thought that was actually a really cool touch. So this is first strike during the combat phase. If you have two or more enemy ships in your forward firing arc within range band 1-3, you may discard this card to treat your captain's skill number as 10 until the end phase. This upgrade may only be purchased for a ship with a hull value of 3 or less. So for 2 points, this is cool. Right, because what I can do is I can put this on a ship like the attack fighter, and then I can give the attack fighter a energy disruptor.
Okay, yeah.
Right? And then just be like, oh, hey, look, I'm Captain Skill 10, Energy Disruptor, and just, like, let her rip.
And there's only a couple things that can get above 10 now.
Right.
And that's the Romulan Commander, and that's only any if he takes a power, Exodia Power Token. I even use him, and I don't usually use that ability at all.
Right.
And Picard and Kirk together. That's the only thing that you're not going before.
Right. So, a couple of interesting things in there, but nothing amazing. The best card that you have in this entire kit is this crew right here. Seskal, for 4 points, crew upgrade. If all of your shields have been destroyed during the roll attack dice step of the combat phase, you may disable this card to gain +2 attack dice.
Yep, that's good.
Fantastic. I had it on my ship. Unfortunately, I never had anything in my forward firing arc again after that when it was destroyed. But this is a really, really nice one. It's non-specific to secondary weapons or anything else that you're doing. It's just gain two attack dice. There you go. Because it's in that roll attack dice step. So that's what's really nice about that. So,
another good card to add to the Kraxen.
Exactly. Well, the Kraxen, any ship, this is going to be fantastic.
But you know the Kraxen is going to suck its shields.
It's going to lose its shields really quick. Yeah.
So you're like, yep, I can put it on there, and then suddenly my Kraxen has 7-8 attack. Right. And in the first.
So this is a great crew for 4 points. If you are a Dominion player, you will absolutely want the third wing attack ship. But you absolutely do not need more than one.
Nope.
One is enough. Everything else in there is just unique or useless. So, really, that's all you're looking for there. All right. So, all in all, these were all very kind of middle of the road with a couple of cool things decks. That's it. They each had a decent card in them. They each had an elite. They each had a captain that was a decently high captain skill. All of the ships were somewhat useful in a fleet. I think the Klingon ship is the only one that you might say, I just want the cards.
Yes.
But that's only because of the fact that you have amazing Klingon ships already that just completely overshadow this.
Yeah. But if you're going out to an OP and you draw any of these, you shouldn't feel bad drawing any of these in your games because they're all pretty balanced between each other, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only one, like we said, everything else but the Romulans is all just a... You don't have to be feeling like you need to go out and buy it or
buy a ton of them. One is enough for any of these.
Except for the Romulan one.
The Romulan one, you want to get as many of them.
Or the Romulan one as many as possible. Get 2 or 3 at least. Just because the advanced cloak is going to be so useful in your fleet.
Yeah, you're going to get a lot out of it. All right. So, they did recently release the cards for the Scout Cube, which I'm sure we'll be talking about in the next episode here. But, all in all, very positive out of these. I think that it's a cool addition to the game. The models are a cool addition. The special rules are very cool. I love the little tricks that they throw in there for you. And I think every single one of these ships, you'll be happy to get. Like you said, you'll be happy to get as a drop. All right. So, hey, I can't think of a weekly listener poll just yet. Do you have one?
If you were playing a Star Trek Attack Wing OP, which one of these ships are you most excited to get?
There you go. That's a good question. All right. So, of the OP... blind booster ships, which is the one that you would be most excited to get as your random draw? So you can find that at jadedgamercast.com. We'll have that up. So, something shiny. We saw Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
So, spoiler alert right here. If you guys are haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy yet, we're going to be talking about that movie and we're going to be spoiling shit.
Yep.
So, definitely turn this off right now and go see that fucking movie because it's amazing.
It is very good. That's all we're going to talk about now in 5, 4, 3... 2, 1. Okay, let's talk about it.
It's the Nova Corps. They got my dick message. No, the movie's fucking hilarious. And I think the thing that I enjoyed most about it was the fact that at every single opportunity that they had in the movie to be serious, dramatic, or like any sort of like thrilling sense of dread, they would cut it. They would cut it with humor. So, you know, like, there would be the moment, like, okay, the moment with, he saves Gamora from space, and they're he's lying on her, and she's like, oh, Peter, and he's like, oh,
something really heroic,
and she just gets very annoyed, and it's very funny, or like, when he's trying to hit on her by putting the music over her ears, and she's just like, it has a good rhythm, and you're like, oh my god, this is fantastic. Like, every time they would do something like that, like when Drax is talking about his dead family, and then they would cut it with a joke, or Rocket Raccoon is talking about the experimentation, cut it with a joke.
Any time Drax spoke, actually, was a joke. And we're not meaning because it's Batista playing him.
He was phenomenal,
by the
way. He
was actually really good.
Very, very enjoyable as Drax.
You green whore are my friend.
You, this green whore. Yeah, you know, the dumb tree, also my friend. You know, but again, like, the funny thing about Drax is
I think it's going over his head. It wouldn't, because
my reflexes are too good. I would catch it. But no, like, everything that Drax said was, it was like, Drax was always explicitly explaining the plot. So, like, when it gets to the end there, and Drax is just like, you are my friend, you are my, like, they're basically just saying, like, the group of losers and loners now have all found each other, and they've all just kind of decided that they're going to be friends. The best part of the movie was the dance-off.
Oh, yes.
I almost pissed myself.
Actually, Aaron messaged me at 2 in the morning after watching it, and he was like, the dance-off! He's like, Ronan gives this amazingly epic speech, and all you see is
Peter Quill doing a dance. Ooh, child, listen to these words. Things about to get easier. Well, I love it. Yeah,
pass it.
Because I love Ronan.
Pass it back. Okay, underhand.
I love Ronan, because Ronan's just sitting here. He's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? I'm distracting you, you turd blossom. No, you know, like, it just, the humor, the underhanded cursing, the underhanded adult themes. Because I took my kids, I saw it twice this weekend.
Yeah.
I saw it with you on Friday, and I took my kids and my wife to see it today. And second time through, a couple days later, just as funny, just as amazing. Really, really fucking enjoyed it. And, you know, I really loved just how they would have those, like, gross adult moments that, like, the kids will just never get, where she's just like, and Peter, your ship is filthy. And he's like, she has no idea. You got a black light in here? It's like a Jackson Pollock painting. And it's just like, oh my God. But hey, you know what? Kids will never understand that shit.
Yeah.
Which is what makes it so entertaining for adults. And then, of course, they had a couple good curse words in there. They kind of were able to squeeze in. They covered up a fuck, which was funny. You know, like, and the plot. So it's funny as hell. The plot is very fun, very smart. Mm-hmm. Even though, from a comic book standpoint perspective, you know, I didn't necessarily like what they did with Ronan, but I liked how Ronan was done in the movie, so I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, he was okay. I actually really enjoyed Ronan. He was better than Dark Elf guy. He's
Malekith. Well, he had more screen time than Malekith, right?
The only thing I want to talk about on the plot is that this is like the third movie where we got another stone.
But that's the idea.
Are we at 3 or 4 stones now?
3.
I thought
the Tesseract was one. The Aether was the other.
Yeah,
and then this is now it's purple, and I believe purple's the soul gem, if I recall correctly.
No, but I was reading about which ones they've revealed in Marvel, in the cinematic universe, and the colors are different than the ones in the comics.
That's true, yes.
Because I think purple's power now, but red was power in the comics.
Red was power in the comics,
and then,
yes.
And I think they said the Tesseract was mind, but mind wasn't blue.
No, Tesseract I thought was reality. Or space.
Yeah, but the colors are different.
I think Tesseract was space.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is different.
The colors
are
different.
But, you know, essentially, yeah, that's what we're getting, because they are leading up to, I mean, Avengers 2 is the end of Phase 1, and then we start getting into the other ones, and we start building up to the idea that, like, they're going to have all of these gems, right? Because that's their whole idea for all these phases. And that's what's going to tie all of these different movies together.
I thought Odin had a gem in one of the Thor movies, because they said they didn't want to have that many gems on Asgard.
It was essentially the Tesseract, but they have the Tesseract after Avengers. It's in Thor 2, where they talk about the Tesseract.
No, I know that, but I think they were saying that there's 2 gems in Asgard.
Well, no. What you're thinking about is the after the credit scene where
they go to the collector.
Sif and the other guy go to the collector, and they bring him the ether, and they go... He goes, well, why not keep it in your own vault? And he said, the Tesseract is already on Asgard. It's not a good idea to keep 2 Infinity Stones close together. Because that was after Thor takes the Tesseract back to Asgard after Loki's bluggity bluggity blah, right? Yeah. So that's essentially where they went with that. So the plot in this was cool. I liked it. I liked that it was this cultural fanatic on top of, you know, just the hilarity of, like, you know, the Ravagers and all that kind of stuff. Like, they did such a good job with Yondu and all that kind of stuff. I really enjoyed that side of the plot. But the thing to note, for anybody who hasn't seen this yet and is listening to all these spoilers, the action is not as good as Winter Soldier or Avengers.
No.
Don't expect it to be. It's kind of right on par with, like, Iron Man 3, where, like, the movie's just fucking hilarious. And it's I think I like the story in Iron Man 3 better. But, like, the humor on this was just on par with that. It was really fucking good.
What'd you think about seeing Thanos?
I thought Thanos was played really well.
Yeah.
You know, the animation was very good. Voice was really good, and I loved just the way that they played the character.
The animation looked like it was actually... His face isn't even animated. I thought it was actually someone with makeup on.
No, it was full on CG.
Yeah, that's
how. So he got that like really long chin and like long face.
That's how good it was though. Like it literally looked like it was some guy in a makeup.
Oh, they did a great job with it. They absolutely did a great job with it. That's kind of the only real negative. The only other real negative is that Nebula is kind of this tertiary character in the movie that doesn't really have anything to do or to say for the most part, but she's still very cool.
But she lives, so she's gonna be in the next one.
Well, we'll see her in probably either the next one or Avengers 3 when they do Thanos. Because we'll absolutely see her again, and I think that's the idea.
Yeah, because she lived.
Yes, absolutely.
She lived for sure.
But again, you could tell that they weren't trying to do much with her in this time around.
They're just introducing her.
Yeah, exactly. But I still enjoyed it.
So where do you put it between all the big movies this summer that you've seen?
This summer?
Yeah.
Best movie of the summer, easily. I think, because again, like what did I say before? It was Edge of Tomorrow was the best movie of the summer so far. This one... finishing off the summer absolutely blows everything else out of the water. It was 100% enjoyable. I mean, there's very little negative to say. Because even every time the movie starts to get cheesy and you want to roll your eyes, they cut it with humor and you're just like, oh, okay, never mind. Right? Like, they do such a good job of giving you the movie. Like, even the whole intro sequence where it's like his mom's dying of cancer.
Yeah.
And then he gets abducted. And then they cut to him on the planet. Looking for the orb, and he just like grabs the little like rat thing and starts like singing into it. Like that whole intro sequence was fucking fantastic. Everything they did in the movie was done so well that like it's very hard to pick out bad things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's kind of where it lands for me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, absolutely phenomenal. I mean, is it better than Winter Soldier? I would say no. But that's just because it's two totally separate. Winter Soldier is an action film.
Yeah.
This is a comedy.
Yeah, Winter Soldier is such a different thing. I think I enjoyed Winter Soldier more. I enjoyed both of them more than I enjoyed Spider-Man. Spider-Man was not a good experience.
I heard a lot of that. I heard a lot of people go, it's better than the first one, but that's not saying much.
I still have to say that I liked Days of Future Past. Like, we talked about this before.
I liked Days of Future Past, Edge of Tomorrow was better for me.
It was my favorite of the summer, actually. I don't know, just Days of Future Past is like, it hit all the points for me where I love X-Men so much.
Yeah, yeah.
And no, that's fair.
I really enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong.
It encompassed exactly what I thought that would be.
It fell short for me, and that was the only thing. I could talk about the negatives of Days of Future Past, which I may as well now. basically, the problem that I had with it was that outside of Xavier, every single character in the movie, they decided there was just not going to be any development whatsoever. And that's a problem because all the X-Men in the future are basically just set pieces. They don't say or do anything. There's no development. They're kind of inexplicable. There's no reasoning behind anything that they do. They're just kind of there and they're just there to fight. Which is cool and great. So, hey, yay, they're there to fight. Fantastic.
Yeah.
But it completely falls off for me in that aspect that, like, why would you waste all of these actors that have been so good in the previous films? Like, why would you just waste them so that you could only ever focus on the past? And then in the past, Wolverine's there just to be Wolverine. There's nothing entertaining or exciting that happens to him because it's the same shit that happens to him all the time. He flashes back to shit that happens in the past and you don't remember. And, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. But then even you've got Michael Fassbender, who's an amazing actor, doesn't do anything. Doesn't do or say anything of import.
And then you've got Jennifer Lawrence as
Mystique, who doesn't do or say anything of import.
I don't agree with that at all, actually. I thought every time Fassbender and Mystique were on the screen together, I thought there was a lot of stuff. I'm not saying
that the lines were bad. It was just that there was no development. It was just like, I'm doing this because of this. No, stop.
No, because I thought the actual backstory about why those two were so close and why their interactions in X1 and X2 were so the reason they were was flushed out really well in Days of Future Past. Because you really didn't know, like, if you read the comics and you watched the TV show, you knew what their backstories were. But their backstories in Days of Future Past were so much more interesting because there's more happening than this.
I got that out of first X-Men First Class. Like, I didn't need Days of Future Past to deliver that backstory to me.
Because Days of Future Past only was ever him just hitting on some 16-year-old.
No, it was a 16-year-old hitting on him.
Yeah, whatever.
Right? But, like, again, Does a tiger need to wear clothes? Now get naked. Okay, so yeah, I back to Guardians of the Galaxy here. Like, Guardians of the Galaxy, fucking hilarious.
Oh,
I
great.
Mean, we were cackling the entire movie.
Oh, it's hilarious.
It every single moment of that movie on screen is phenomenal, and I have to laugh. And this is the last thing I want to say about it. DC feels that everything on screen needs to be dark and humorless and joyless. It just has to be sadness and killing and fighting and death.
Did you see the DC teaser from Comic-Con for Batman vs. Superman?
Yeah.
Where Superman's floating?
Yeah. It doesn't mean anything, right? Like, it's just, oh, it's so sad, it's so this. And then they go, oh, well, we can't make a Wonder Woman movie because we don't think people would accept it. Well, here's Marvel made the movie where two of the title characters is a talking CG raccoon and a talking CG tree.
And it made $90 million.
And when Groot, yeah, no shit, it broke fucking records. When Groot, quote-unquote, dies, right, there's some emotion there, right? Yeah. Like, my wife was like, I teared up. Like, my kids were upset. Like, Kyle was saying his daughter, like, bawled. Like, you know, they made you care about these CG characters. Mm-hmm. Somewhere George Lucas is pointing at the screen going, see, I told you it was possible, right? Like, this is basically what it comes down to here. Is they did such a good job with those characters, and they made them so enjoyable that when all of these things happen, you feel for it. Like, it works. You're down. And Bradley Cooper as Rocket, perfect. Groot, phenomenal. Like, every single character on screen was great. Even Gamora, who is essentially very dry with not a ton of character outside of, you know, dark past, hate Thanos,
yeah,
yada yada.
Wants to kill things, yada.
Well, I mean, she was all about honor and stuff like that, which is why it worked, but it wasn't as interesting as the other characters. Not that it was uninteresting, it just wasn't as interesting. She was played very well, mm-hmm. because, again, they hint at there maybe being a love story and them playing this, you know, relationship between the two of them, but every time he tries to get fresh, she kicks him in the nuts and, you know, they push on past whatever. So they never, at no point does the movie end in a kiss or anything like that. It ends well. I loved the bit with his mom, and I loved the bit at the end where Gamora's yelling, take my hand, and he sees his mom saying, take his hand. I thought that was mm-hmm. really fucking good, like clever writing. And then at the end, he opens it up with the new Awesome Mix 2 and all that kind of stuff. And they use that Awesome Mix to keep all the sweet-ass soundtrack in there of just, like, old-school jams. Yeah. It's just super fucking awesome. Like, it just the movie hits every single point
the movie,
and knocks it out of the park, with the exception of the action.
The movie makes you care about, in the last climactic battle, about the Nova people, like, rolling up there and knowing they're going to die. Like, you are emotionally invested in a bunch of nameless characters
that are
above their planet. Like when the ship breaks through and starts killing them and they're screaming, that's not just, like, nameless, faceless people dying. You're like, oh, my God, this is traumatic.
Well, but then they go and they tie it in because they've got these side characters like John C. Reilly, you know, and they've got they had a couple of other Nova characters recur and then die later in the movie, and then they've got Glenn Close as the Nova Prime, you know, and then, you know, even John C. Reilly at the very end is just like, I have a family, they're alive because of you, you know, thank you. And then, you know, as they're playing the mix, they show him coming back home, and his wife and daughter are the two people that Rocket saved on the bridge.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, see, like, I'm glad that they showed us that after the fact, not before the fact, to make it cheesy. They just like, oh, by the way, those people that he saved were these people. Like, you know, you could have totally seen them doing it beforehand where he saves them inexplicably. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just they played it so well that you really enjoyed it. And, of course, there's goofy-ass flaws with the movie, just dumb stuff that they fucked up. And, you know, could have done this better if you'd maybe just done things this way. But,
yeah.
I mean, it's a Marvel movie, so there's a certain liberty that you give it because you do turn your brain off and have fun. And I think that's why it works so well. Anyways, yeah, I think that's about that right there.
Yeah, I think it was a good introduction to the Marvel Galactic Universe area.
I think my signed issue of Guardians of the Galaxy number 1 signed by Dan Abnett might be worth something.
Very true. So that's very true.
That has been Jaded Gamercast for this evening. My name is Lang.
I'm Maddie.
Have a good one.
Peace.